I am the person me who is very engaged in gender matters, gender politics, trying to introduce more genders than the two ordinary ones in order for more people to find a suitable place for themselves in culture. And I know that with a male body you can never become, totally become a woman, nor can a woman totally become a man. And however hard you try, in a way. So some people choose those options, but if we are all to win the first prize, the top shelf in the amusement fair of life, we need more than two teddies. More than a pink one and a blue one. We need a yellow one, a brown one, we need a crocodile. We need so much for people to see a kind of image of themselves that they can feel a belonging to. So I think that's the main thing I do, is to introduce more. I do not want to take away much, but I want to introduce more.
Can you share with me a bit your background, how you build a profession? If I may ask, when were you born and when are you growing up in Norway? And what is that
Yes.
kind of political and social context like at the time?
Oh, good heavens, you're asking me to tell the short story about my life. I was born the 3rd of May, 1949, so I just
I
wrote.
was born the 4th of May.
You were?
Yes.
Good, so we are May kids. And I grew up in a small town in the southern part of Norway, where I'm also living now. And my father was a medical doctor, my mother was a nurse, and everything sort of took place in our house. Because my father was working on the first floor, and my mother was working with him. And I have two sisters and one brother, and we all grew up in this house with very open doors. And I remember one story that may have influenced me in some way from my father. He was a medical doctor to a GP. And one time he had a woman coming in, and that woman started the conversation by saying, "I just want to tell you that I'm a lesbian." And then my father says, "Okay, but do you suffer from anything?" So, and I think that sort of said a little about the attitudes in my home. So anyway, I grew up there, and I guess I was very, very clever at school, and it was at an early point in time decided that I should be a doctor. I was a good-looking man, young man. I could do just about anything in sports, anything. But at the same time, I knew that I am more than that. I had these secrets within me that I didn't tell so many people about. My hidden woman, you could say. And she came out, or that part of me came out in the public room very slowly, starting with me being caught red-handed by my first wife. That was during my medical studies. We had already had one child, and we lived together for 16 years, having these two kids, a daughter and a son. So I finished my studies, and I wanted to be a GP. And I also had this thought in my mind that if anybody should sort of out him or her or he herself as a trans person, it should be me. That sort of just dropped into my head. That sort of all kinds of people need some kind of figurehead person that is there and that sort of opens the gates and opens the paths for those behind. So I knew I was going to do that. I didn't know exactly how I was going to do that, but I knew I was going to do that.
This is around what year?
Now we are back in my 20s, which would be more than 30 years ago. But it moved very slowly, and I opened up to my friends, and I started to do some research on trans people together with another sexologist from Norway. I became interested in sexology, and then the 16th of October, 1986, I met with Elsa in Bergen. She had invited me there to present on the research that I have been engaged in on trans people, and we fell in love with all the stars and moons and planets of the universe. And it gives me the, you know, still. And there was, I mean, there was no other way to go but to sort of go home. And we had some troubles in our marriage anyway, and I was not a good man for my ex-wife. So we broke up with all the pain that that takes. But I think that in our minds we thought that what we are going to do will have the power to sort of carry the pain that it causes. And we have been together now for 23 years. In that process, we have, on the personal level, we have sort of disclosed me and my things, and, you know, like ripples in water. So in 1990s, I think it was in 1992, I was contacted by a Norwegian television team asking me if I would sort of out myself on television, and they were nice, so I said yeah. And that sort of outed me to the Norwegian public. But through these ripples in water way of working, all the people in my hometown, they wouldn't be surprised to see this on television. They would say, oh, we have known that for a long time. And then when my son was in his teens, I was asked by another television team if they could make a documentary of me. And my son heard that and he said, Papa, could you please wait till I've had an education in movie making so I could make that documentary? And I said, sure, well, wait as long as you need. So when he was 25, I made this movie all about my father. It's really my son's perspective on having a father who is trans and what that does to him and to the family and everything.
Were there any other public figures in Norway around the time that you're growing up or the time that you come out publicly that represented what you wanted to do?
No, not really. There was, and I don't know who is first and second and third, but about parallel to me, there was an artist, a painter, who also had a female persona. But he or she was expressing herself very, very differently. And I think, as far as my senses go, with much more fear, and was taken very seriously locally, where he's dead now, or she's dead now. But really, no, I would say no.
So at what point do you envision yourself as a political cause in a way? Because it seems like you're not only dealing with your own gender identity, but you're also willing to break the norms and the rules and use yourself as a kind of political strategy.
Yes, because, right? Certainly, as a political tool.
Let me just
I think that, you know, if you... the public as such knows very little about trans talents and trans states, you know, as did I. So I was as ignorant as anybody who met a person like me 60 years ago. So, or 50 years or 40 years. So, and then I would start to look up, you know, to find who am I through encyclopedias and things like that. And wherever I looked up, it said that I was a sick person. to put it in my words of today, I didn't feel very sick. I didn't even run a fever. So I said, these people are wrong. They are burdening with me with a diagnosis that is unnecessary for me. And where a diagnosis that makes something precious to me into something that is ill and wrong. And I think that that's what mainly sparked my interest in and the necessity to be political and to open space to the unusual human being, that you are not sick, you are not disturbed, but you certainly do disturb. So in a way, what I am doing now is I'm still a therapist. I'm a therapist to individuals, to couples, but I'm also trying to be a therapist to all those people who are disturbed by people like me. So instead of accepting the label disturbed, I would like to assist those I disturb. Now, I disturb psychiatry, I disturb psychology, I disturb a lot of people. And I've experienced that when they meet me and when I give lectures, and we have a favorite lecture, my wife and I, because a lot of this work we do together, that's called gender euphoria. It's that nice. And this gender euphoria, we quote Marcel Proust in the first part of that, when he says, the real voyage of discovery consists not in seeking new landscapes, but in having new eyes. Mm. As maybe you are doing too with your work, is to promote the renewal of eyes in people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Why do you think that issues of gender identity are so threatening to heterosexual society?
I don't know, but I wouldn't really confirm the idea that you have, because my experience is that I do not provoke people, and people are not provoked by those who are different. I think what is more provoking is the insecurity, is when you say, excuse me, but I'm so sorry, but I'm different. That's much more provoking than say that I am different.
Mm.
And I have something to tell you. I can see something that you cannot see. Would that be interesting you? Would that be interesting to you? No? Mm. And it's much better to promote euphoria. People are not so disturbed by euphoria, but most people are disturbed by dysphoria.
Mm.
And when that dysphoria is induced by culture saying that you're sinful or criminal or sick, then of course that will induce dysphoria in people, and that provokes much more than the joy,
mm-hmm.
pride and the euphoria.
What is the general narrative or understanding nowadays about issues of transgenderism in Norway?
Well, of course, that is an impossible question to ask, because mm-hmm. it will depend upon who you ask about their opinion. But I think that the work and all the coincidences that have happened to me in my life, becoming a very public person, becoming, what do you call it, a celebrity. I was in the dance with the Dance with a Star, I think it's, mm-hmm. or Strictly Ballroom Dancing, where I mostly danced in dresses with a woman, you know. So when I meet people on the street, they smile at me and they tap my shoulder and say, you are doing such good work, keep it up.
Mm.
So in the general public, I think the attitude towards trans people is very, very positive. The problems are, in Norway, is that those who have been given the task to work with trans people, be they transsexual or other kind of trans, they do not like me. So they work against me.
Can you expand on that?
On the central hospital in Central Hospital of Norway, there is what they call a GID clinic, Gender Identity Dysphoria Clinic, run by a psychiatrist. And I met her. I was very happy that she came in, because we needed such a clinic. So I contacted her on two or three occasions and said, we have to we must cooperate. We can sort of build a network that makes it much better for trans people in Norway to get in contact with professionals that can be of assistance, and so on and so forth. And she was never interested. She did nothing. On the contrary, she started to work against me, and there was a case some years ago where I had been, there's many things to talk about. But I have to say some words about this, because being a public person and even a celebrity, I will be I'll be on television, I'll be many places, and in a way that's kind of a third order of therapy. So I'm doing therapy to all the Norwegian population in a way. And one consequence of that is when a boy or girl says that I'm not a boy and not a girl, I'm the opposite, whatever that might be, and the parents will say, no, you are a boy, look at your dick, look at me, you know, you can see that, and the child will say, I'm not, I'm a girl. So when the parents have been fighting their child for a while and seeing that every time they say no, their child becomes more unhappy, they sort of know what to call, where to call, because they have seen me on television.
Mm-hmm.
So thus I have a population of kids who do not perform gender the way they should. And the first one I met when she was 9 years of age, and she was a somatic boy, she had a penis, but felt like a girl. And I followed her and her family and worked with the school, worked with all the people that could be disturbed by that child. And at some point, puberty starts, and she becomes very annoyed and potentially very depressed because of this betrayal, bodily betrayal. And I knew then, because I have seen works from the Netherlands, that you can postpone puberty in kids like this. So they have more time to establish, am I a boy, am I a girl, or am I something third or fourth? So I did that, and then I was, turned in by the GID clinic doctor, saying that this is wrong medical treatment. And I had a long malpractice case going with Norwegian health authorities. I won that, and 1.5 years after that, they started doing the same kind of treatment in the GID clinic. Mm. But she never said that she was sorry, and of course this has taken a lot of energy from me. And still she is doing things, the same kind of thing. She is, if she can in any way, what do you say, make the image of me dirtier, she would do that. And I don't know why. Maybe she's envious. Maybe I have published much more than she has, both scientifically and not scientifically. So that could be an explanation, but I don't know. She will not answer my letters.
Well, that's unfortunate, because
you
could be working together.
We could. Mm. To the benefit of many people. And now I use far too much energy assisting the people who have been maltreated at the General Hospital, at the GID clinic. And I use too much energy to work with health authorities, because they are inspired by the GID clinic to investigate me.
So the official trans organization is that one, the GID?
No, there are two official trans organizations in Norway. and maybe a third coming up. The GID clinic, that's a psychiatry, which it should not be, of course. This is not psychiatry. It's a scandal that this is handled by psychiatry. Mm. It should be handled by endocrinologists, sexologists. If you scan the congresses of psychiatry in the world, you will find this much on trans. If you scan the sexological conferences of the world, you'll get this much.
Mm-hmm.
Now, anyway, then I lost the thread.
You're saying that there were two organizations?
Yeah. So there is one organization for transsexuals, F64-0, that used to be open, flexible, and interesting. They have had very close links to the GID clinic and have become rigid, orthodox, two gender-minded people, believing in the dichotomy of gender, believing that there are but two genders, which is also sad. I used to be sit there on the board of directors, so they kicked me out, and I cannot answer why. I don't know. I think maybe because I was not disciplined by the dichotomy. Maybe something went wrong, which is also sad, but it has happened many places in the world. Mm-hmm. There is struggle between those who believe in a more fluid way of perceiving gender, who believes that there are far more genders than two. We operate with seven, and if you have an eighth one, it's welcomed.
Can you expand on that? Could you share with me these numbers?
Of course. The seven ones are, and remember, these are people we have met. It's not a theory, a map that we want to sort of impose on people, it's just the people we have met. So it's we call the female genders, and we put them in plural just to indicate that there are many colors within that category also. It's the male genders. Now, to be male is not one thing, it's another thing. And then it's the intergenders, or the intersex genders, which is also a group that has been made ill, like Klinefelter's phenomenon, Turner's phenomenon, androgen insensitivity phenomenon, in medical terms called syndromes. For me, it's phenomenons. That's a great group, organized amongst other organizations in the organization Intersex International, OII, which say that when surgeons, like in Norway, operate on the genitals of babies because they do not fit one of the two categories, it's the same as they do in Somalia. It's genital mutilation. That's what they say. Now, that's the intergenders. Then you have the transgenders, where I belong, also in other rainbow for people, ways to express yourself, ways to more or less change your body, to make your body a good place to be. Then there is people who really refuse gender. You could call them gender refusers. They say, gender is not me. Those I have met have been very political on that, even more political than I might be. Then they have the personal genders. I have one, I ordinarily call this person Oscar. And Oscar presents with long blonde hair, beautiful makeup, girl clothes or female clothes, bulge here, and no breasts. And I ask Oscar, what pronoun do you want me to use when I talk to you, I talk about you? And Oscar says, he, of course. And then I said, well, what gender are you, Oscar? I'm a little confused. And Oscar said, I'm Oscar. That's it. So I do gender my way. I do not want to sort of be in any other known categories. And then the seventh one is eunuch genders. And you have the Hirshas or the Khusras of India that may identify themselves belonging, some of them to the eunuch gender, I don't know, but I would imagine. But there is a group, an organized group called Eunuch Genders that are, as I have not met any of those. The other 6 months I met representatives from. But they are somatic males who want to remove their testicles because they feel that those testicles, they are not me. And of course, I think they are entitled to do that. I believe in self-determined gender. And I believe that we need more and two to determine among.
I have a question about the use of language, which you bring up.
Yeah.
Which, because it seems like language is structured in such a way that it is the one that is giving the categories, the naming, the fixing of identities, and so on and so forth. How do you reconcile with this fact?
Well, I believe that language is our main way of communicating as human beings. So, and I believe in categories because I think we cannot get rid of them. I think we will categorize whatever, however hard we try not to, I think we'll do that. And I want to be in communication with the existing terms. If I introduced or try to sort of construct a new and totally different language that I would find more appropriate in many ways, I don't think it would communicate. So my way of thinking is to change things a little more gradual. I'm sure you've heard that I use the term talent.
Mm-hmm.
I talk about trans talents, I would talk about androgen insensitivity talents, intersex talents, because that's in that way I'm language-wise opposing the more medicalizing terms like syndrome, misshaped, or and things that is really not very good as label. I use phenomenon. I think it's much better for a human being to be a phenomenon than to be a kind of disease, walking disease,
mm-hmm.
or walking misfortune. So that's the way I try to add to the language words that are more, much more positive. Talent is a positive word, and I think it applies very well. My talent for being trans was a very, very strong one. That when I tried to suppress it, made me quite depressive. Huh?
Mm.
So, which I think is true for all strong talents. I'm sure that if one had tried to stop Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart from making music, he would have become depressed. Because he would have felt that there is something in here that wants to get out. You know, I can hear it in my head. I want you to hear it too.
Mm.
And did I answer your question?
You did quite beautifully. And also it makes me think in a very nice way about Judith Butler's theory of gender performance.
Yeah.
And creativity is a form of performance, right?
Yes.
I was also going to ask you, has any of this work on queer theory or other theoretical work influenced the way that you have shaped your political thinking and your life?
I think that yes, in many ways. I'm not the disciple of anybody, but I have been influenced, I'm sure, by Judith Butler, by other thinkers. There is there was a beautiful man. He's dead now. I lost his name. He's written several books. He's an historian, an American guy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Anyway, I have been influenced by him. I met a lot of the, what would you call the trans therapists. They have influenced me by giving me knowledge, insights that I would have had to use much more time to get without them. I'm influenced by Eli Coleman, who's one of the parents of this human sexual rights.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very influenced by my wife and our mutual creative process when it comes together. I think I'm very, very inspired by my clients and their stories. I think that really the main source of political energy, I think, is derived from them.
Yeah.
I would think I would use the other professionals that I mentioned more like powers of confirmation. Like, see, when I meet something, when I meet all these people and they tell me their stories and their agonies and certainly their beautiful experiences and their joy, and it makes sense to me, it's good to read some professional that can confirm that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this makes sense. This is logical. This is in line with what other people think.
Mm.
So, yeah, many inspirations, but not the disciple. Is it called the disciple?
Disciple, yeah.
Yeah.
Let me return to the political reality of being a trans person in Norway and the kind of challenges that are faced when you recognize that there is some issue of your gender identity or however you want to call it that is not in place in the normative way.
Yes.
What is the situation for a trans person in Norway? Is there a legal framework, anti-discrimination laws and so on and so forth? Is that something that you're looking to fight for?
Yeah, the government, the last government, which is more or less the same as the present one, they made a bill, I guess it would be called, on LGBT rights. I tried to get the I in there and the Q in there, but that was as far as they could go to the T.
The I for intersex and
yes.
Q for queer?
Yeah. Maybe an M for miscellaneous. But anyway, they made this bill and it's really very, very good. And it underscores the rights of all people to be the way they are. I was part of that bill, so sort of one of the front sides. So I was fortunate to be cooperating with the ones who made that bill. So that's there, and it is very good. It could be used as a template for other societies in how to make this political. It goes into workplaces, it goes into school, it goes in everywhere.
What does the bill, what does it say? What is it about?
Well, it promotes the right of all people to express gender the way they feel right for them. It opens up for more genders than two, which is very, very important. I think that's the main thing, and it also underscores the right for medical and professional assistance when needed. And I do believe that it certainly opens up for more options than two. In the GID clinic, you are either a man or a woman. So if you have a male body and they say that you are not transsexual, well, that you are a man, and you get nothing. No?
Mm-hmm.
If they found out that you are a woman, then you get everything. You see? So if I if I was a person who would like to have a more female body, I would like to have tits, but I would like to keep my penis because it's all right, you know, I get nothing. And I think this bill opens up for a more nuanced way of offering professional, medical, technological assistance to trans people, which is very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way it is now, you are forced either to be in congruence with the body you were born with, or to be the sort of what is called the opposite gender.
Mm-hmm.
We are opposite power. Yeah? So Maybe you have opposite gender for me right now. but that's what I call it. And I think this bill opens up for much more. As does a report from the European Commissioner of Human Rights. Have you seen that? Very late, came now in, I think it was in August or September. A bill on the rights of trans people. I think that is limited to trans people. I read it but once, so it's not really integrated in my system, but that is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Really beautiful. And it says in very clear words that there is a rainbow of trans. As there is a rainbow of inter, as there is a rainbow of everything. And it underscores the human rights, the right to be and to express what you are. This is not so hard to understand.
Yeah. We understand that there is sometimes a discrepancy between the law,
yes,
and reality.
Yes.
What is that here in this country? I mean, well, because this is a new thing, this,
yeah,
bill.
This discrepancy as of today is that we have gendered, what do you call it, these numbers that identify you?
ID cards?
Yes, ID card. There's a number, like mine is 03054946375. Now the 3 says that I have a dick. So, however hard I try, might try to hide that away, this number that cannot be divided in two would sort of disclose me. So we have that. We have in our passports, passport of Norway, you are either a man or a woman. I try to get 2 pictures, since I also appear as a man. It's no problem for me, you know, to be a man also. Express myself as a man. As a trans person, I would have all these talents available the way I do it. But when I go with my passport, I wanted to have 2 pictures so I could feel as secure in my female expression as in my male expression. And others in Norway have tried the same thing and met a brick wall. No one. So the main thing in Norway is the monopoly in the central hospital, GID clinic, the dichotomous thinking, and the lack of more than 2 options. On the other hand, the attitude amongst politicians, amongst the general public, is much more open than that. So in a way, the Norwegian public is much further in their development and in their way of being able to nuance gender than the system of law is, and also the system of medicine and psychiatry. So those are the ones lacking behind. But I know that this will change. There are very good signals from Norwegian health authorities working with this. The Norwegian Department of Health and Social Circumstances has asked something called Social and Health Directorate, I don't know what's that called in English, to start working with the situation for trans people in Norway from 1st of January 2010. And what will happen then is very interesting to see. There are a lot of things that I have to add also, that if you go to a Norwegian hospital and if you are giving a diagnosis and offered a treatment and you feel this is not right, I'm not sure about this, you have the right for a second opinion. As a trans person, you do not have that right, because the GID clinic is monopolizing. There is no way. So the only other option for you, if you need some kind of treatment, hormonal or surgical, is especially surgical, is to go abroad, like Thailand, where the surgeons are very good anyway. And I'm working with a lot of the people. I've had many somatic women who wants to have their breasts removed. They do not want testosterone. They do not want genital surgery. They just want the breasts removed because the breasts say woman, woman, woman. And they do not feel like woman, women. So I was able to assist three such people to have the breasts removed, and they're all very happy about that. But then I was accused of malpractice.
Is that a legal accusation? I mean, do you have to face
it's not illegal. Or... Yeah, I have to face the health authorities, not the legal authorities. They will not put me into jail, not of today anyway. And I think they would have problems finding out what jail to put me in. Don't you think? So
they have to make a new one just
for they you. Would have to. They would have to, with a nice wardrobe and not a bit near us. Now, anyway, I have a warning hanging over my head on basis of doing what is right by the WPATH standards of care as to how we can treat trans people. I have a warning hanging there. If I do this again, they'll take my license away.
Mm.
So I cannot do that anymore, unfortunately. I can prescribe hormones, but I'm sure that somebody might like to stop me there also, but I don't think they can. Mm. But I can no more. If you are a transsexual and need hormones, you'll get it on what we in Norway call a blue recipe, which means that the state will pay most of the bill. So I cannot do that anymore, even though that my trans people are just as entitled to those hormones as are the ones of F64-0. So my clients have to pay their hormones themselves, because the worst thing you can do to bureaucrats and politicians is to use their money.
Mm. I understand there has been some differences between the trans organization and the gay and lesbian movement.
Yes.
And even to the extent that the leader of the trans organization, whose name I can't remember right now,
Tuna Maria,
rejected to be included in a bill.
Which is the bill that I talked about.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I have not talked about the other organization yet, but what has happened to the organization of transsexuals that is called now the Harry Benjamin Resource Center is that they consider themselves men and women. And thus, why would they need a T? Why should that they be in a bill that encompasses the T's? Because they are men and women. And that's why she is not there. And I think that's a main reason why she does not like me anymore, because I say that also the transsexuals are trans people. That does not mean that I would say to Tone Maria that you are a trans person.
Mm.
If she considers herself a woman, she considers herself a woman. That's not problematic at all. But we must have an umbrella term in a way, I think we must have been, at least in 2009, that sort of can take in and embrace all trans phenomena, including, of course, the transsexual phenomena. Since this Harry Benjamin Resource Group has become so rigid and tight, and looks upon themselves as totally different from other trans people. Very few, if any, professionals who work with trans would agree on that. But that's the way they feel. Because of that, the LBG organization has included T. To make it optional for the T's who do not think the way as Tone Maria does, to work politically, to have an organization in their back. So I think that's the reason for that. And I certainly contributed to that happening. So I'm happy to be in that group too, the T group and the LGBT.
Well, it seems like your position allows for a broader political maneuvering.
Oh yeah, yes it does. Because it has so many, there are so many. To work only for the transsexuals is very limited, and most of what they need is one. They can have their birth certificate changed. They have all rights of the woman they have become or the man they have become. They can marry, they can adopt children, they can do anything. And they have not the right of treatment by law, but still they have the GID clinic. So to the extent that they pass through the gates, everything is done. Everything is done. If you do not pass the gate, you get nothing. So in a way, the organization for transsexuals, the gatekeeper for that organization is a psychiatrist sitting at the central hospital, because she is the one who says, yes, you could belong to the Heritage Resource Center because you are a true transsexual. But you're not. Or something totally different. Mm. So in that way, those who are declined, but still themselves believe themselves to be transsexual, they are also declined from a membership or a good membership in the HBRS, the Harry Benjamin Resource Center. Mm. And that's sad, because then the refusal day experience is doubled. They are not only refused by the GID clinic, but they are also refused by those who they should be the mates of.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore this LGBT, and there is another organization called the Organization for Trans People, where you can be transsexual, you can be anything. So that's the most colorful one.
Are you in an international dialogue with other groups, be it in Europe or the United States or elsewhere?
Yes, I'm on two networks. One network working primarily focusing on children and youth, and also a network focusing on trans phenomena and assisting trans people as a whole group from age zero to death. So I'm there. We did form this summer an activist group, international activist group. Thus far we are but a group of email addresses, but we know of each other. And there is a very rising power and a very strong power opposing the dichotomy, opposing the monopolizing of diagnosing, opposing the all or none attitude to treatment. So there are quite many also around.
I have a question about issues of talent or creativity as it manifests in the arts. Is there room in the cultural legacy of Norway, a place of identification in positive ways, a place where trans persons that are coming to terms with their gender identity can reflect on, be it the media or literature or the movies? Or
I don't think I quite understood that question. Can you reframe it?
My question is whether, in other words, I'm trying to speak about the representation of trans in culture,
yes,
of trans people in culture,
yes,
be it by the media or the films or the
yes.
movies.
Okay.
Because I find that in my case, I'm not a trans person, but when I was coming out as a homosexual, it was very important for me to find a space of identification in the literature, for example,
yes, of course,
or in other places.
Mm-hmm.
What has been the Norwegian tradition in representing issues of transgenderism?
Well, there is not much in the in the literature, like the essay literature, there is not much. There is one crime story written by a trans person with a trans person main, what do you call it, main actor, main
character.
So that's that one, and of course it's the movie All About My Father. There's another movie called 100% Human, on a transsexual woman, whom I both know and love a lot. So those two, there's a movie on this artist, this painter that I was talking about, there's a movie on him. So there are three documentaries on trans people. There is one documentary in press, so to speak, that was just bought by the main broadcasting company of Norway. I think it's 8 episodes with trans people in their ordinary life. So I'm looking very much forward to see that.
Are you one of these?
Both yes and no, because they said that I occupy so much space already. So they said, we don't need you.
Right.
And I said, no, you don't. Beautiful. If you can get other people, I'm very happy for that. So nevertheless, I think I'm included, because one of these characters that are in there, they come to me for consultation. So I think I'm in that way. I'm in many settings on in the media, so I appear quite often in all different ways. Making food, you know, dancing. I'm very often asked about things, you know. What do you think about that and that and that and that? I am a sexologist. I'm a specialist in clinical sexology, so I'm very often in the media answering questions that do not concern trans, but I'm there, and my name is Espen Ester. So it's like there is an old Latin saying that the drops will came out the stone, not by its force, but by its constant tripping. So my life has become a constant